So this is Mark Knobloch. We're here with Dr. Chasse, who just gave us an outstanding talk on some skin wounds and skin injuries and conditions in athletics. So, Dr. Chasse, could you just briefly tell us a little about where your kind of background, how you got to where you're at in terms of medical, but also in terms of your focus with any skin, you know, how that came about?
Sure. I am a primary care sports medicine physician, and I've been doing that since I finished fellowship in 1996. And at that time, I had gone to the University of Texas at Austin as the women's head team physician and did that for a couple of years. And I was the head team physician from 2005 to 2011. And I've been continuing to do sports medicine-related issues since then. Here in Houston since 2014, where I helped take care of U of H athletics. So I've seen a lot of training rooms, seen a lot of student-athletes in training rooms, and skin's been kind of one of my interests because that's the one visual thing that people see right away, and it gets their attention. And so because of that, it's been interesting being able to see all the different things that go on.
And it's actually not very pretty sometimes, I noticed.
Yeah, it's never pretty. It's never pretty for the athlete. And a lot of times people will be a little skittish about coming in early to at least talk to.
And it's not painful necessarily. It's just, what is this? And, I've had my share of plantar warts and things like that. And it's like, oh, this is, but it's not really a big deal in the grand scheme of things. So from an athletic setting, what do you see? You see obviously a lot of things, and you probably see a lot of things repetitively. Is there anything that you see that you know that is more preventable than athletic trainers are making it out to be? Meaning that you see this and you know this could have been prevented. Is there anything, words of wisdom that we should be doing to prevent specific conditions?
Yeah, I think, and I had mentioned in the lecture that a lot of times our teams will get maybe new shoes. And it's like day one, you're in camp, and there's all these brand new shoes. They haven't been worn in yet. They haven't been just walked around in just leisurely for maybe a week or two before they start. And then people do a two-a-day on the volleyball court or go out and play tennis with their new shoes that they're so excited to have. And then you just reap the terrible friction and mechanical issues that occur. And I think that our athletic trainers probably know that. And that's the hardest thing to do is to work with the coaches and, if you have a equipment team to try to make sure that you get those types of, especially those shoes, get those out to them so they can at least put them on, wear them a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's not as fun as walking into a locker room and having everything new, but it's so much better for the athletic training staff because they don't have to deal with all those blisters and mechanical issues.
And do you see that? Let's say you go from a pair of Nikes and you get the exact same shoe as a new pair as a replacement, do you still need the break-in or just
absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Any new shoes before you're gonna run in 6 hours, take a break and do a two a day, you need to make sure that you're at least kinda working them in a little bit, getting used to it.
Okay. And so you'd say maybe wear them around the house, something.
Yeah. Anything to break them in. Yeah. Anything you can do to break them in.
So on that note, there's a classic argument, it's kind of been settled, but I want your opinion with blisters. Got a new blister, do you pop it, or do you protect it and play with it with the fluid in it? Because the argument is you pop it, you get the new skin exposed and dried off, and it becomes, usable, or do you protect it, leave it there, because, it was a friction, and what's your opinion on that?
So, as I mentioned to the group that I was trying to entertain out there today with all those skin lesion buffet.
Kind of
right.
To be happy all the time, so.
And it was after lunch. Some of the wilderness medicine folks all have kind of looked into this, and I've been a big proponent of being able to, and it hurts like hell, I'll tell you that ahead of time, is if you can get a little small tuberculin needle and go ahead and draw the fluid out. Mm-hmm. You got the fluid out. You got the skin attached, and it hurts, but you can put a little bit of benzoin in there, and you can use that skin, your own skin, to glue that down and help a little bit to get you through that instead of having this open, for lack of a better word, open wound, but at the same time not just leaving something that once it busts, it's also friction.
Extremely painful.
So it's pretty much, it's sort of a glue from the inside out. It's a different way of thinking about it, but I've had some success with that.
Okay. So protect it, so drain the fluid, but leave the covering instead of just taking the covering off and exposing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Along those notes, along those lines with skin wounds, one of the things that we've always been taught is when it comes to skin wounds, if the ends are closed, you can butterfly them. If the ends do not stay closed or they don't, if there's separation there, you should send them off for a referral for suturing. Is there a general rule you look at, not on telling us what to do, but when you look at a skin wound, a cut, clean laceration, what makes your determination of when to suture versus when simple butterfly strips?
Right. So really location. I think location's the biggest thing. So if you have a cut that's over an extensor surface and you know they're going to be bending the knee or the elbow, you got to – and we're lucky there because – our maker gave us a little residual,
a little looser
there on purpose so that our bones wouldn't go through the skin. A lot of times those will work their way back, but if it's that much where they're not coming back together, I take a look. It depends on if it's over a structure that might have a bursa. It kind of depends too, like I said, on the location, because it might be where aesthetically, it's not going to be an issue if it scars down with a little bit of a keloid or anything else, just because it might be on the outside of a thigh or maybe in another area. So location will make a big difference in the whole situation on how long it's been. Any other foreign body in the area, or is this something we need to clean? Because if it opens up enough, sometimes you'll think about a deeper closure before the superficial closure.
So on that note, ironically, you hit something that reminded me. So, it's well known we're just covered in bacteria. And so, you go back to kind of what you said, your maker. And so we're designed to fight and be able to handle bacteria. So let's say you're on the field and somebody gets what we traditionally call the strawberry in the knee, just an open wound on the knee. Mm-hmm. Is it, there's the PC or official answer, and then there's the realistic answer.
Right.
Are there times when, yes, you got dirt in there, but I can wrap it up and you can play and we can deal with it later? Or do we really need to pull you aside, take you out of the game, clean it, with sterile gloves and sterile saline and get every little rock and little piece of dirt out of there and then close it up? Mm-hmm. Or are there times that, it's acceptable to let them play? Or do you really feel that, because I've seen so many infections, I really recommend that you give a deep cleaning before you let them back in? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think it kind of depends on what the situation is on the time-wise, right? So if it's two outs in the bottom of the ninth and somebody goes and gets a strawberry going for a foul ball and stands, then, they can go ahead and finish up that game, and then we'll go ahead and take care of that in there. If it's the first inning, let's say, and they can tolerate it and they want to go and continue to play, we're going to go ahead and probably keep them in the game unless they really would want that. Just knowing that 3 hours later after a baseball game might be done, that they might be more of a candidate for an antibiotic just because that's been sitting there for a while after we've cleaned it up and everything. So I think it just depends on the time and how it looks, and then how much you're going to be able to do in follow-up. It might be that, a lot of times these things will start about 48, 72 hours afterwards. We won't know, but the good thing about our athletic training friends are they're taking a look at this all the time, or their parents, you give them the right, patient education, you can watch those folks and see, and if that redness doesn't come back or if there's not any idea of some infection after 48, 72 hours, you're probably going to be okay.
And that's something I was told, I still remember when I was a kid, and it's a pet peeve of mine now, is somebody will look at your skin wound and they'll say, oh, it's red, it's infected.
Right.
Red's blood flow.
Yeah, it's inflamed, inflammation.
Because red, it's not an infection. Is there a sign that you look for, no matter, if it's 3 hours later or 4 days later, that you say, okay, is it swelling that usually is your trigger? Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's always going to be red around the edges, but what triggers you to think that this is we need some more work here on a simple skin wound?
Yeah, the increase in pain. A lot of times people say, it's hurting more and more, or there might be some fluid that's coming out, or it's getting more swollen, or, maybe the first time you saw it wasn't as tender. The red's a little deeper red, almost a purple. So you look at those types of things where things might be going in the wrong direction versus just kind of a pink, red, this just happened, fresh meat type thing.
Okay. Yeah. So pain's one of your indicators.
Sure.
That's something we need to look a little deeper.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have tenderness when you press, but you want to follow it later on. And if it seems to be progressing, then
so that may
something might be going on.
Okay, this is a simple skin wound. What's your pain scale now? And
that
may bring you back in a day. What is it? And so you should see at least a mild, if not a plateau, at least going down. But if they're going up, then we've got something else going on. Okay. So you mentioned something that interests me. You showed swimmer's ear. To me, swimmer ear is you got water just sitting in your ear canal. But you showed a picture of swollen ear and painful. Is that a chlorine issue? Is that a water, like, is the ear absorbed water in? What causes the swelling and the pain in terms of swimming? Is it, what's the factor?
Right. So in the canal, it's the infection inside the canal. So it's a little bit of kind of like a cellulitis,
okay,
if you think of it that way. And so that you can get some swelling through there. And a lot of that happens because of the changes in just the milieu of the canal. So we have wax, and the wax is there on purpose. It's helped protect. And sometimes with swimming, the wax might come out, and that little lubricant in there to help protect you, this is also is something that people feel would be protective against bacteria, et cetera, is no longer there. So it's sort of like a second skin in there, and sometimes it can, if that's been removed, then you'd be set up for that. And, of course, our swimmers are people that are getting more chlorine or bromide, depending on what type of pool you have.
Okay.
And that might cause a change in the wax itself or lack of wax and could set you up a little bit for that. So
really the wax is there kind of as a waterproof coating, and then you've taken it away, and now the water can get in there to these sensitive structures.
Or the waters have washed it away, or the chemicals in the water.
Interesting. And something else you brought up in your talk, because you brought up stretch marks, and nobody talks about stretch marks in terms of weightlifting. They always talk about it in terms of pregnancy and things like that.
Right.
So one of the common treatments you see on television is buttercream. Mm-hmm. What's your belief on stretch? I mean, it sounds from your talk, you know, you brought up that they went away. It took 30 years. Is it kind of, other than, you know, using some kind of surgery, is it pretty much that when you have them, you're stuck with them? Realistically, or do these butter creams actually do have any benefit on them that you see advertised?
Yeah, I think in general, you know, a body's a wonderful thing, and it'll heal somewhat. I think if you went out and you're out in the sun a lot with your stretch marks, you're probably gonna, it's probably gonna be hard a little bit to lose some of the color in there. But they do recommend some of the different types of creams. Some of the dermatologists will. There might be some specialized creams for that are prescription for dermatologists. Just the over-the-counter, I don't think it's going to hurt anything. I think they'll probably be off the counter. I don't know if they're helping, because they probably haven't gone through any randomized control type studies and such. But it's been one of those things where people have always kind of recommended that.
Okay.
So
no harm.
So. Yeah, usually no harm.
Yeah.
No harm, no foul here.
And so as a physician, what can we do? Is there anything that, you know, away from injuries necessarily, like in terms of skin care, you know, we talk about stretching and keep your muscles ready and things like that. Is there anything you recommend in terms of maybe a supplement or things that you see? And obviously sunscreen would be one, but is there anything else you recommend that we do to take care of our skin? You know, do we take too many showers? Do we shower not enough or not scrub enough? What do you recommend in terms of skin care for anybody?
Yeah. Well, in general, I think that, you know, anything that you've kind of been doing on a regular basis, your body's kind of used to that.
Yeah.
And if you're doing okay with that, that's fine. Sometimes people start changing, like maybe they're showering three times a day, or they're doing a different soap or maybe a different shampoo. Kind of changes the body up a little bit. And sometimes you might end up getting a little bit of issues with that. You might have used the same sunscreen for a long period of time. Maybe it was, you know, some type of cream. Now you're using a lotion. Maybe you're getting a little bit of issues with that. I mean, I think in general we want to protect our skin from the sun as much as possible. And so someone asked me, well, what type of lotion or solution or cream, and I'm like, the one that you like, because that's the most important thing, is to make sure that it's on the top of your brain, it's on your skin to help you protect you from the skin, and using other things such as hats and sunglasses as well. The other thing I think that's really important to protect us, especially in the training room, is the, you know, washing of the equipment appropriately. I know that a lot of times when they're washing, they're putting these huge industrial strength types of washers and dryers. And sometimes in the middle of that, they don't get as much clean as maybe on the outside as it's getting twisted around. And sometimes that heat that's needed to kill that MRSA can't always get in there. So it's highly recommended that we try to keep that water higher than 140 degrees and maybe 160 degrees in there, which is a little bit more than what normal is, throughout, to try to kill any of that bacteria moving forward. And I'd still recommend that, even to, if you have a chance to change, make it a little hotter. If you have a son or daughter that's in school, because they're always going to be washing clothes a lot with workouts, to consider doing that too, just to try to make sure you're getting that staff killed.
Okay. And you brought up, too, a good point that I don't think we think about. We talk about athletes, you know, athletes need to do this, protect them, you know, when they're set. But standing there the whole time is the athletic trainer. And so especially from, you know, what, April until October, they're out in the sun. And so, you know, in your expertise, you know, I want to ask you, we hear so much about the SPFs. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference? Is SPF 4 any different than SPF 50, or do you need at least a 30? What do you recommend on sun protection?
Well, I recommend, especially for those that are going to be out in the sun all the time and might lose track of time because they're busy, to get the largest SPF
so
there
it
is.
Matter.
Yeah. I think there were some points where anything over 60 was kind of, maybe, for lack of a better word, maybe a joke. Mm-hmm. That wasn't, it probably didn't make that much of a difference. But I think that the folks that make the determinations on SPF have improved on that. But I would use absolutely the highest SPF as possible if you're going to be out there all the time, because you never know. A kid might go down, and you're going to be out there longer than what you thought, and it's not going to be the 15 minutes that you thought. And things might keep you out there a little bit longer. It's good to have you covered as much as possible.
Okay. Last thing, since it's summer, it's swimming time. Any recommendation for swimming besides, you know, do we need to pay attention to if the water's, you know, is there times when we should avoid the pool with, you know, pH values or chlorine, or, you know, any swimming safety from a skin aspect other than apply sunscreen and things like that and use the proper eyewear, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Anything else you think of that you may have seen in your office that was preventable?
Yeah, concussions.
What?
Yeah. So swimming. I know this is a shocker.
Yes.
So swimming alert here. A lot of times they'll be swimming in the same lane, going back and forth, and you get a bunch of heads bonking, and that's just probably the worst summer swim injury that you could have. I think sunscreen is going to be great. A lot of times, just for competitiveness, the swimsuits aren't as small, and they're a little bit larger, maybe even torso. Mm-hmm. On the torso, to help protect the skin, you know, make sure a lot of those times those are hard to get on, but they're also hard to get off. You want to make sure that you're showering after that and staying dry so that you don't get any of the heat and sweat-related issues up in your midsection. And I would say that, just be careful if you're training. Make sure everyone's in a different lane so that you don't end up having to come see us for a concussion.
Okay, I got to ask, as a skin expert, scale of 1 to 10, 10's I do everything right, what level are you on protecting yourself?
Oh, gosh. Well, I was out there telling them how bad I was. You know, I wasn't gifted in the hair department. I was way behind on that. But for some reason, I always thought that I was young enough. And just 1 year sitting on the stand on the sidelines without out of hat, I want to say probably, I think it was 2006 on the UT sidelines, I noticed all of a sudden I was getting some aging on the top of my head. And that was a bad, and it's never going to go away.
Yeah.
So after that, I need to be really more reticent about making sure I've got a hat on and sunscreen and everything. And I've really tried to push that. Even when I go to Galveston with my family, I'm wearing a lot of stuff.
Okay.
I mean, I almost look like I'm, you know, I mean, hardly anything is showing just because
of
that.
You look like the old tourist now. You wear the hat, and, you know, the big hat and the baggy pants and everything. But
got the big old cream on my
They can laugh at you now, but you're going to laugh in the long run because you'll be fine.
So absolutely.
Can you just real quick tell us, tell the listeners your contact information or where you work, where, if they wanted to contact you with something something, how would they contact you?
Sure. What you would contact is UT Physicians. You can get us at www.utphysicians.com, and you can, in the search column for physician, put Chassay, that's Chassay. I'm a primary care sports medicine physician, and I work on Mondays and Thursdays downtown on Fannin on our 22nd floor at the Memorial Herman Plaza building, and then Wednesdays I'm over at Memorial Southeast seeing patients over there. So that's probably the easiest way to do that. If you're on this cast, you're probably very computer literate, and that's the best way to get it done.
That's right. And I hope if they are computer literate, they go and look through some of your pictures, because it's scary, but it's so educational to see the picture, because we can talk about what, you know, what Raynaud's phenomenon is, but until you see a picture of, or frostbite, it's right. just, and so your slides here, I'm looking back through them, were just outstanding in terms of educational. They're frightening to see what can actually happen, but most of them, a lot of them, you know, they're scary, but they're actually harmless. So, but anyway, Dr. Mark Chassie, I want to thank you for participating, and if anybody has any questions, you now know how to contact him, and I also want to give a shout out to Jeremy with the Sports Medicine Broadcast for what he's helped us with here at the Sports Medicine Update.
All right. It's my pleasure, Mark. Thank you.